All right, now I remember. So, yeah. Okay, we're off to a great start. As I was walking in here, I was thinking to myself about how fortunate you are that you have the great one, that I'm willing to make the sacrifices I make to do this podcast for your education, your entertainment, and your enlightenment. For truly, yea, verily, will this podcast take you down the path towards enlightenment.
You can scream and shout with all your might.
Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, sniffle, piss, moan. Look for a safe space.
Dig in your heels and hold on tight.
Or you can shove your opinions up your ass the way the trumpet fuhrer's cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. That's just, it's a burden. It's a burden I have to live with. It's a burden you have to live with. But I burden myself for you so I can bring you the wisdom, the insight, the analysis, the entertainment. Right now, what I could be doing, I could be stuffing my face and looking at the television. I just finished watching the original Battlestar Galactica movie, because it was a TV series. It started off with a two-hour movie, and I just watched the original Battlestar Galactica two-hour movie, just because I felt like I was sitting there, I was thinking about stuff, whatever, and looking at things I should watch, and I said, you know, let me watch that again, because I've got it. Let me see what that's like. There's a lot of potential there that went wasted. The new series, the remake, was pretty good. First about three seasons, then it started falling apart. If you look at the original Battlestar Galactica, you could see the potential for greatness, but it just didn't manifest. It just didn't manifest. They didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't know how to bring it out. And then I got to the end of the disc, and there's a special features. I'm like, oh, I don't know what the special features are. Let's see what the hell the special features are. So there's some deleted scenes. I'm like, oh, deleted scenes. All right, let's have a look at it. And there are a lot of deleted scenes, and there are a number of subplots that were completely cut out of the movie. So anyhow, I'm in the middle of watching the deleted scenes for Battlestar Galactica, and then I have a Mick Foley compilation of Mick Foley's matches that I could be watching. If you don't know who Mick Foley is, it's WWE wrestling. I don't want to hear about how wrestling is fake. I understand they're acting, okay? It's just as real as politics. Wrestling is just as real as the predictions about how many people are going to get Wuhan virus, okay? So don't tell me how fucking fake it is, right? Unlike all these people who are supposedly going to get Wuhan virus and actually don't get Wuhan virus, in wrestling, when you see the guy climb up this ladder and then jump off the top of the ladder and land on top of another guy who's laying on a table and break the table in half, that guy is actually climbing up on a ladder and jumping off and landing on another guy who's laying on a table and breaking the table without hurting himself or the other person. Okay, that's the skill set right there. Let me fuck with my tea. Brewed up a mug of hot tea right here. And then we are just about to get started. We are going to go have some fun. I got a pile of newspaper articles in front of me that, in theory, I have vetted, and they're going to be interesting. In reality, we'll find out. Who knows? I am the great one himself, the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. I have been on the internet since 1999. I have been podcasting for 15 years. Michael W. Dean and I invented blogging. You're welcome. Michael W. Dean and I invented podcasting. You're welcome. I'm right. I'm always right. I've always been right. I will always be right. I have never been wrong. If any of that offends you, or you know, you got your panties are in a wad, or if you're a cute girl and you want to send me a picture of you without any panties, whatever it is, you can send that to God. That's fur baby spelled backwards, God at CYNLIBSOC.com on the interwebs. So how you doing? All right, let's get going. What have we got here? Oh, this. All right, I got to get this. I've been going to do this in the last two episodes of the fucking podcast and haven't got to it. Okay, now, you know how the great one is always telling you about how recycling is a scam? And most of the stuff that gets put into the recycling bin doesn't actually get recycled, and how that triggers all of the leftists and the eco-wackos and all these people who virtue signal by doing their fucking recycling and shit. Yeah, you know how the great one tells you about that? Well, let's have a look, shall we? Rocky Mountain Collegian, newspaper of Colorado State University, Thursday, March the 5th, the year of our Lord and Savior, the Trump and Fuhrer, 2020. Cover story. 98% of LSC, that's the Lori Student Center, 98% of LSC waste can't be recycled. Operations department can't keep up with volume of contaminants. The operations team at the Lori Student Center has made new efforts to try and increase the rate of recyclables around around offices, lounge areas, and the food court. However, because so many students are uneducated on what is considered recyclable versus a contaminant, only about 1 to 3% of waste from the food court is able to be recycled, said Nancy Cowley, the environmental services manager of the operations department at Lori Student Center. Okay, first problem, there is a job title, environmental services manager. So what this is telling me is that Nancy can't get a real job. Now, the next problem here is that these college students, Zoomers and millennials, these college students are not sufficiently educated on what is and is not recyclable. First of all the recycling cans have labels on them telling you what's recyclable and what's not. Secondly, most of these people, statistically speaking, believe in global warming and care about the environment. They're really concerned about those sea turtles that are going to choke on plastic bags. Not enough to, you know, fight back against not being able to take your fucking reusable bag, rather, to the grocery store in the times of Wuhan. So now they're using all these plastic bags that are going to kill sea turtles. But all these people who care so much about the environment, and they're so smart, they're informed, they are the smartest generation ever. Ladies and gentlemen, the smartest generation ever. They're uneducated on what can be recycled and what can't be recycled. LSC faculty throw away both trash and recycling because so much of it is contaminated and can't be recycled at all, Cowley said. Which is what I've been telling you for years. Most of the recycling bins, they go straight into the garbage. The shit is not being recycled, people. It's there so you can feel good. Well, no, great one, it's being recycled because it's contaminated. Same difference. I mean, it's like you can sit here, you can say that the Jews, let's do Jew stuff. Jews were put into concentration camps because Hitler was racist. Or you could say the Jews were put into the concentration camps because they deserved it. But regardless of the reason, the end result is that the Jews were all theoretically in the concentration camps. I mean, I haven't really seen any proof of this. But let's say that the concentration camps, the extermination camps, let's say that the Holocaust actually happened. So the Jews were put, it doesn't matter why, they still went there. I give a shit why these excuses you got. Oh, you can't get the contaminants out. Really? Hold on. Aren't there some unemployed people who need a fucking job? Maybe you should sort the contaminants out. The operations department has put up signs to try and help, but it can only do so much, said Tamina Albany, the director of operations at LSC. The LSC cannot effectively get rid of waste in a safe and eco-friendly way without the help of students and staff. Department of Operations leadership said, so they need your help to do this. Kelly and her supervision team train employees on the job, along with formal training 2 times a year to make sure everyone is up to date on the correct regulations and procedures. There's formal training with additional training 2 times a year about how to put things into the recycle bins. About what is recyclable and what is not. Remember, this is the smartest generation ever. After the trash is collected, Sheila Bracken, the facility's management operations manager, and her team take the trash from there. The amount of trash that is eligible for recycling depends on contamination, Cowley said. Up to 60% recyclable, depending on events and food. More contamination decreases this amount, unquote, Cowley said. The operations department has included information in RAM Welcome, as well as to try to get the word out, but even then, it's not enough. The amount of foot traffic throughout LSC includes more than just students. Students and guests for events and tours all contribute to the amount of waste that can be contaminate the recyclables. Quote, people need to be in the habit of paying attention. I don't want my team sifting through a contaminated bag going between people need to be in the habit of paying attention. I don't want my team sifting through a contaminated, not recyclable, it's a contaminant, unquote, Caldy said. Many things that are used in the food court, such as latex, plastic cups, plastic foam, takeout boxes, and food, are not recyclable, yet they are thrown away as if they are, which contaminates the entire bag, Callie said. Yes, that's why people like me deliberately throw our trash in the recycle bins. If a single bag has a contaminant, it goes to the landfill with the rest of the trash across campus. The operations department team in the LSC has started a new green initiative this January as a way to help minimize waste. Quote, we began collecting paper towels in the bathroom. This is not even a word. Wherever. Wherever there are hand paper towel dispensers in restrooms, there are collection containers stating that it's compostable. This is helping the LSC become more environmentally friendly overall, Abell said. You know what's helping the university become environmentally friendly? Is the part where Wuhan has shut everything down and nobody's on campus. This way, the paper towels are disposed of separately from the rest of the trash and can be sent to the compost field on the west side of campus. The paper towels are used as brown matter, along with the dead leaves and grass, to be turned into soil, Abell said. The paper towels can be combined with animal bedding and green waste to help create a natural resource for CSU. The soil is then bagged and sold to farmers across Fort Collins and is a significant source of revenue. Although the food court vendors operate separately from LSC management, they contribute a significant amount of waste that is being disposed of that the waste management team doesn't see, Callie said. Behind the vendors' walls, there are numerous trash cans and pounds of waste that are discarded daily. Well, not anymore, there aren't. There are no recycling bins anywhere inside the store at the LSC, said an employee at LSC's Freddy's, who wished to remain anonymous. Everything goes into the trash cans. Yes. Yes, it does. The waste disposal area for all the food vendors only contains trash cans with no area to dispose of recycling, the employee said. There are many opportunities. And they had to get there. They couldn't just walk back there and look for themselves because that would require doing some journalism. It'd be like investigative journalism or some shit. There are many opportunities for recycling at the Laurie Student Center. However, the amount of waste that is actually able to be recycled is very low due to lack of education and bad habits by all students, staff, and visitors. Gosh, for the smartest generation ever, you guys just aren't very smart, are you? All right, moving on. Now we can get to this stuff over here. Hang on, I got to attend to some potential audio scenarios here. Give me one second, because computer's doing annoying shit. All right. We're just going to roll with it. What's the worst that could happen? If you never hear this podcast, then that means the worst that could happen happened. Dear Abby, these are more newspaper clippings from my left-wing statist mother. Let's see, hold on, I don't think I'm going to do this one. R. Kelly held on federal sex crime charges. I mean, it's probably funny, but I don't know that I care that much. Wait, hold on. A 16-year-old victim claimed Kelly physically abused her when she disobeyed his sexual directives, including slapping, choking, and isolating her in rooms for days at a time with no access to food. Oh my God. And this is this sort of shit that, you know, white girls are listening to this guy sing and thinking this guy is the crap. Is there anything else I care about? Whoa, Kelly, according to the indictment, had rules. Oh my God, a man had rules for women. Well, he's clearly a rapist. The girls were to call him daddy. Okay, so far so good. They weren't allowed to leave their rooms to eat or go to the bathroom without his permission. Nice. They had to wear baggy clothing when not going with him to an event. Well, yeah, you don't want your bitch like looking like a slut for other people. And they were instructed to keep their heads down and were forbidden from looking at other men. Okay, that sounds a lot like Islam. This could be some anti-Islamic Islamophobia here. For years, his staff, managers, bodyguards, drivers, and personal assistants recruited women and underage girls as sexual partners for Kelly, according to the indictment. Let's see. You have to call me daddy. Can't leave your room without permission. Wear baggy clothing when you're not with me. Keep your head down and don't look at other men. I think he's onto something here. I think these are good rules. Two of his former employees charged in the Chicago case with conspiracy to receive child pornography. So hold on. Trying to get someone to send you some child porn is a conspiracy, but I'm sure you're going to tell me that inflating the number of people who have died from Wuhan virus is not a conspiracy? All right, well, yeah, I'm kind of glad I read that before I almost threw it away. Well, here's the other thing that I was about to throw away. Maybe I should look at this. Exhibit explores genderless fashion. Here we have a picture, it's a black guy wearing a dress. You know, now that white men have been completely, thoroughly emasculated, I mean, it only makes sense that the feminist would now turn their attention to turning black men into pussy-whooped, emasculated soy boys. Just one more time, I'll say it just in case anyone wants to hear this and believe what the fuck I'm saying. Black men, the feminists are not your allies, okay? They're just using you. How many times do I have to tell you this? Oh, this is an actor. Billy Porter. I've never heard of Billy Porter, but I'm also not a fan. This was a thing that he wore to the Oscars. He's wearing a giant black dress. When actor Billy Porter unveiled his combination tuxedo ball Christian Serrano gown at the Oscars last month, it got people talking. This is from the Houston Chronicle, Monday, March 25th, year of our Lord and Savior, 2019, the Trump Infura. Oh, okay. Porter, the black and gay breakout star of the FX series Posse, had bucked traditional Academy Award attire, fancy frocks for ladies and basic tuxedos for men. Oh boy, he wore some clothing. Good for you. He's stunning and brave. A photo of Porter's eye-catching Oscar garb is included in the new exhibition at Boston's Museum of Fine Arts that opens to the public on Thursday. The exhibition, oh God, okay, this is what's art. Let's talk about art for a minute. Art, like everything else that's beautiful, is dead. Art, oh my God, art. A photo of Porter's eye-catching Oscar garb is included in a new exhibition at Boston's Museum of Fine Arts. Opens to the public on Thursday. The exhibition, titled Gender-Bending Fashion, examines moments in history when clothing transcended and muddled our understanding of gender. When clothing transcended our understanding of gender. When clothing muddled our understanding of gender. Now, I don't know about you, but I can guess, I can make an educated guess because you listen to this podcast. You, like me, have probably never been confused about whether somebody was a boy or a girl because of clothing. Probably in your life, clothing, fabric, has never transcended your understanding of the fact that there are boys and there are girls. And hang on, I got to deal with this audio problem. This is going to drive me insane. I'll be right back. All right. Did that work? That worked. Okay. The show, which continues through August 25th, was inspired in part by what's happening in fashion, said Michelle Fillmore, a fashion historian and curator. Quote, the lines are getting more and more blurred, unquote. Only for you, sweetheart. The rest of us can still tell the difference between a boy and a girl. Quote, gender-bending fashion is the... Oh, it's not a quote. That's the title. Gender-bending fashion is the first large-scale exhibit of its kind to be hosted by a major museum. It is composed of mixed media, paintings, record covers, and photographs. But a highlight for the viewers. Oh, we're going to find out what the highlight is. There's going to be a highlight here, guys. It's going to be like the highlight of your day. If you're using the Wuhan Productivity Plan, which you can access by going to cls.link/Wuhan Plan, and you could be using the Wuhan plan to get things done in your life, to improve yourself, to make progress, to make yourself better, stronger, sexier, more desirable by women who are certain that they are women and are not bending any gender roles and are not getting confused or muddled by clothing, right? Real women, women who like to have cock shoved up inside of them, have it pounded home until cum squirts inside of them, and then they want to walk around with their eyes down and not leave their room without your permission, and they call you daddy the way they should. That's the way a woman should act. God damn, man. And the Wuhan Productivity Plan can bring you closer to having yourself a cadre of whores. Sorry, hoes. A cadre of hoes. A stockade of thoughts who will be available for you to spank anytime you want. You don't have to spank the monkey yourself. You can have a thought do that for you. Why can you get thought do that for you? Because you utilize the Wuhan Plan to get dead sexy, to get smarter than ever, to make lots of money, to profit off of the stupid people. There's got to be ways to profit off the stupid people, right? And speaking of profit, for a second, let me jump back real quick to the previous episode where I talked about the smash burger and everything. You know, I thought about it some more after that podcast, and here's something to factor in, because I talked about, okay, so this guy's making $75K a month, but he can't make a profit. Where's all this money going? And we did some quick napkin mathematics, and we saw that a shit ton is going to employees. Well, you know, for the restaurants that are still open during the Wuhan panic, I said they can't be making that much money. However, if they're not having to pay their servers, and, you know, granted, the servers are, a lot of them are getting paid less than minimum wage because of tips and all that other stuff. But if they're not paying the servers and they're not having to pay all the taxes, the employment taxes on the servers and everything like that, you know, maybe if you actually look at the math, maybe that is a sustainable, I mean, financially sustainable business model, actually. So I wonder if, on the other side of this Wuhan thing, we're going to see restaurants that survive transition, you know, to use terminology of genderless fashion. Maybe they're going to transition from restaurants where you go in and you sit down, you order your food. Maybe they're going to ditch the dining rooms and they're just going to be a takeout, you know, a pickup/delivery business. And if they can reduce their rent, because you don't need all the dining room anymore, all you need is the kitchen. Now, they may not be able to do that in the locations they're at, you know, because of obvious logistics. But when we're talking about, you know, opportunities to make a profit, opportunities to profit from the Wuhan hoax, I mean, maybe that's actually a thing. Only time will tell. I can't predict, because I'm not one of these geniuses who predicted that the renovations at the Foothill Fashion Mall that cost $313 million were going to bring in, what was it, nine? Where are my notes? See, I was trying to riff because I thought I remembered. Yeah, $313 million in renovations was going to bring in $9 million of sales tax, but only brought in $3.3 million of sales tax. See, I'm not a genius. I can't make those genius-level predictions like these experts can. The only prediction I can make is that Wuhan virus will not kill enough people, and that people who can't figure out if they're a boy or a girl are mentally ill. All right, that was some tangenting. But the highlight for the viewers, those are highlights, that's how we got to highlights, because you're using the Wuhan productivity plan. What is your highlight of the day? My highlight of the day is doing this podcast, spending time with you, my listeners, smartest people on the planet. But a highlight for the viewers will surely, don't call me Shirley, a highlight for the viewers will surely be the 70 gender-bending ensembles from big-name designers, such as people you've never heard of, and I'm not even going to read the names. One notable inclusion is the tuxedo that actress Marlon Dietrich wore in the 1930 film Morocco. Dietrich has long been hailed as a hero for gender fluidity. It wasn't uncommon for her to wear top hats, shirts with French cuffs and cufflinks, and pantsuits tailored for men. Okay, so she liked wearing clothes that didn't fit correctly. Quote, she was both sides of the binary in that she was either extremely feminine or extremely masculine, unquote, Fenimore said. I like how the trannies and the mentally ill people desperately look back in history, you know, searching for other trannies so that they can say, see, this is normal. This is totally normal. I remember one time somewhere reading, somebody was talking about some woman during the, I can't remember if it was the Revolutionary War or if it was the war between the states, which if you're a cuck, that would be called the Civil War, even though you, because you're cucked, you don't actually know what a civil war is. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to find out soon because so far the Wuhan hoax is not resulting in widespread civil disrest. And so far as I know, politicians and police officers are not being shot yet, but we can hope. I know hoping is not a process. I understand that. I'm not predicting it because I'm not an expert. I can't see the future. You know, like these experts who predicted when the ice caps were going to melt, 2000, 2010, 2014. You know, or the expert Paul Ehrlich who predicted when we'd all die of starvation because it would be impossible to grow enough food to feed anybody in 1980, and then in 1990, and of course in 2000, and then in 2010, and also in 2020. But I can dream. Oh, I can dream about lining politicians up against the wall and putting bullets in them. God, I'm starting to get an erection. All right, anyway, back to things that will kill my erection. What were we talking about? How did I get there from here? Oh, yeah, mentally ill people. It was either the Revolutionary War or the War Between the States. This tranny was writing about how there was this woman who was transsexual, and she wore men's clothes, and she joined the army, and she fought alongside the men. And it's like, no, no, no. She was not transsexual. She put on men's clothing and pretended to be a man because she wanted to fight. Right? I can guarantee, great one. How can you guarantee? Because I was there. Okay, that's how I fucking know. I know exactly the same way the tranny who wrote the story can confidently say that this person was in fact a tranny and thought she was a man when she was in fact a woman. Okay? I'm using the exact same fucking knowledge base that this mentally ill tranny person is using, except that I'm not mentally ill. Okay? This woman was not confused about whether or not she was a man or a woman. She knew good and goddamn well she was a woman, but she wanted to kick the enemy's ass for whatever reason. And so she put on men's clothing and she cut her hair and she pretended to be a man so that she could close with and destroy the enemy like a true fucking infantry soldier. But she was at no point, I promise you, if we could go back in time and talk to this person, I promise you, at no point was she confused about whether or not she was a boy or a girl. That is not why she did what she did. Which is the lie that the fucking mentally ill trannies would have you believe. Okay, Marla Dietrich was not confused about whether or not she was a boy or a girl. She put on men's clothes. She wore a top hat. Oh my God. She was just wearing some nice clothes because she wanted some attention. You know why she wanted attention? Because she's a woman. And women like getting attention. The exhibit references the 1920s, a time when women first cut their hair short. Right, they looked fucking ugly. Then it progresses to the 1960s and the Peacock Revolution. The Peacock Revolution. I think they're referring to the peacock, the pea-sized cocks of the boomer generation. Because boomer men have very tiny cocks. Right. That's why so many of them are getting the Wuhan virus. Because if you've got a big, giant, swinging dick, the virus tries to get near you. You just like, wham, knock that fucking virus away with your cock, right? Because your dick is all swinging. And a fucker's just zaming around in front of you like a helicopter blade. Keeps the viruses out. The boomer men, oh, they got the tiny little peacocks. Tiny. It's so tiny. It's a little bitty. Tiny cock. That's why the boomer women want to bring over all these Muslims. Because Muslims know how to treat women and they got big dicks. Let's give credit where credit's due, man. Muslims like, get your pants down, bitch. In fact, the Muslims like, what the fuck are you doing wearing pants, bitch? Don't look at me. Don't look in my eye. Look down. Look at the curb when you talk to me. Call me daddy. Fuck yeah. The Peacock Revolution, when menswear shifted from plain and simple to flamboyant, colorful, and tailored to the body. The 1960s is also when unisex attire became mainstream. And present day is thought to be the height of gender fluidity in fashion. Each of these moments represents a cultural shift within society, said Joe Pilotti, author of the books Sex and Unisex, fashion, feminism, and the sexual revolution. Well, that sounds gripping. And Pink and Blue, telling the boys from the girls in America. That sounds fascinating. I really want to read those. In the 1920s, women secured the right to vote and fucked everything up. And and ever since then, it's just gone fucking pure downhill. In the 1920s, women secured the right to vote and started working outside the home for the first time. Well, let's not call that working, okay? You started getting paid to hang out with your friends, okay? Let's not confuse that with work, okay? Like, for example, all the men who got up at 4 o'clock this morning to drive trash trucks to collect the garbage to keep society functioning, okay? Like the men who, when it's snowing tomorrow, are still going to be out on the construction sites building overpriced student housing so that your little princess can go to college and then have a bunch of debt she can't pay off because she majored in sociology and women's studies, all right? So let's not fucking confuse anything women do with actual work, you know, the kind of work that men on fishing boats off the coast of Alaska are doing right now. Okay, let's not fucking confuse this. Okay, you sitting in a goddamn office typing on a computer, looking at your phone every 30 seconds to see if somebody has liked your fucking selfie on Instagram, that is not work. Gonna need you to suck a great big dick, okay? In the 1920s, women secured the right to vote and started working outside the home for the first time. The 1960s brought the sexual revolution. We saw how that worked out. Gay rights. We see how that's working out. And second wave feminism. We see how that's working out. People pushing back against traditional roles and taking lots of money from the government in the form of welfare checks because we don't need no man. Today, as the world questions the very relevance of gender definitions, cultural questions are taking visual form in fashion. The world is questioning the very relevance of gender definition, is it? Really? Is that what's happening? I think it's more accurate to say what's happening is that nobody has the balls to tell mentally ill people that they are mentally ill. In our society, mental illness has become completely normalized, encouraged, and worshipped, because once again, the people who are mentally ill need the state. They need redistribution of wealth. They need the pharmaceuticals, right? They need laws to give them special privileges. All of these things that empower the state. And remember, if you don't need the state doesn't need you. I need to put that on a fucking t-shirt. Where the hell are my notes? Fuck. Hold on. Where? Jesus Christ. There it is. Quote, "People are wearing what they like and what feels good," said Andrea Bonner, program coordinator of fashion merchandising at Houston Community College. Quote, "There aren't as many rules as in the past. It's not to say that there were those who saw Billy Porter and were very much for his look, and others who thought he looked like a..." What? What are you trying to say, woman? Bonner added that there seems to be a lot of androgyny in fashion and raved about Porter's red carpet statement. I loved it. It fit him, and it very much fit his personality. Okay, who cares? All right, that's the end of that. That was actually slightly more interesting than I thought it was going to be. You know, in so much as mentally ill people who can't figure out if they're boys or girls are interesting. Now, how about some Dear Abby? Or do we do this? Hold on. What the fuck is this? Oh my God, that's classic. Oh my God, yes. All right. Here we go. Let's do, where are we on time? Let's do Dear Abby. Dear Abby. Oh, it's mentally ill people. Great. This fits in. I recently attended a friend's party that was being given to celebrate their son's 18th birthday. I thought it would be cheeky and fun to buy him a risque card from an adult boutique. When he opened the card, he had this look of horror on his face, ran out of the room all teary-eyed, and went directly to his bedroom. His mother immediately asked me to leave. I gave them a week or so to cool off. I called back only to be informed by the mother that I had violated her son's sanctity of sexual orientation. Sanctity of sexual orientation. She had violated the 18-year-old child's sanctity of sexual orientation. Now, if the teacher in a public school tells an 8-year-old boy there's no such thing as boys and girls, and he might actually be a girl, and he should go home and talk to his parents about getting on hormone blockers, see, no violation of sexual sanctity has happened right there. See, that's totally okay. I had violated her son's sanctity of sexual orientation because he identifies as a they and prefers androgynous boys to women. Yes. All homosexual pedophiles, but I repeat myself, prefer androgynous boys to women. It's because they're pedophiles. It's because they're homosexual pedophiles who prefer young boys, when I say young, I don't mean 16, to women. And don't get me wrong, I can understand this a little bit. You say, great one. Look, guys, have you ever had a conversation with a woman for more than 45 seconds? I blew the joke. Have you ever talked to a woman for more than 45 seconds? An 8-year-old boy is an intellectual giant compared to 97% of the female population. I still don't want to bang an 8-year-old boy, but I'd certainly rather hang out with one. She went on to explain that as a result of my, quote, indiscriminate sexism, unquote, I'm no longer allowed around the family. So, this is a blessing in disguise because whenever this guy finally gets arrested for pedophilia, unless, of course, the Zoomers legalize pedophilia soon enough, which they're going to do, in my lifetime, I will see, 47-year-old men banging 8-year-old boys and being openly celebrated for it. The Zoomers are going to give us the legalization of pedophilia. That's a fact. I am an expert. This is a prediction. Just as I can predict the exact number of people who will die of the Wuhan virus is not enough. I can also predict that in my lifetime, pedophilia will be made completely legal. Not just legalized, but protected. Just as if you say anything to a tranny, if you say to a tranny, you know, maybe you have some mental problems and you need to stop doing the hormone blockers and get your shit together, you can, you know, lose your job or be fined money or potentially even go to jail depending where you are. It will, not only will the pedophilia be legal, it will be protected by the government. And all of you will go, all the cucks, rather, will go along with it because we have to have a government, otherwise who would build roads? And, you know, if some 8-year-old boys have to be ass-fucked in order for you to have a road so you can drive to Walmart so you can buy a fucking screwdriver set that's on sale for $8, I mean, fuck those 8-year-old kids. What's more important? Their asshole not being penetrated by a 47-year-old man or you being able to get to Walmart? I understand. You have priorities. You're a fucking cuck. I get it. I feel I should have been informed on the child's orientation. Whoops, hold on. I feel I should have been informed of the child's orientation being such an important aspect of his, or rather their, identity. My friend said they. My friend said they. You mean your friend said she? My friend said she can't forgive that kind of arrogance and blatant disrespect for their gender identity and sexual orientation. Was I insensitive for not asking first, or should the parents have taken the initiative to inform me? Now, dear Abby's intellectual response here, here's what she's, I actually don't know if it's intellectual or not because I haven't read it. We're about to read it. Dear Abby responds, I think one lesson to be learned here is that some people are not comfortable with sexual humor. Another is that it is a mistake to assume that everyone is straight or cisgender. You know, it's a mistake to assume that everybody is mentally healthy. It's a mistake to assume that some people have a fucking sense of humor. It's a mistake to assume that the vast majority of people around you are not delicate little fucking snowflakes blowing in the wind looking for any excuse to have some kind of emotional trauma crisis so that they can blame all of their problems on the evil cisgendered heteronormative white person who gave them a card on their 18th birthday. This is what it's like to be always right.